Thank you. That's good. That's a good signal for the people out there that they're missing something. Did you have a good time out there in the lobby? Good. I told you you would. Our next act, Sheila K. Adams. She's been here at teaching at Augusta off and on, actually, for the past 10 years, teaching various classes. Right now, this week, during Vocal Week, she is teaching, unaccompanied Appalachian ballads, and her class has been enjoying that. And a couple of exciting things have happened to her lately that I want to share with you. She has won the North Carolina Brown Hudson Award for her wonderful artistry, and also she's written a screenplay that's going to be made into a major movie. Ooh. So you should be watching in your newspapers and find out when Redemption is coming to your local screen, because that's her work, so we're excited about that. So I'd like to introduce Sheila K. Adams.
Stage shuffle. Which microphone? Well, for all of you that requested the blue dress from last year, I wore the gold dress this year with all the spangles and stuff. It's good to be back here this year. And as was said, a lot of really neat stuff's been happening. This screenplay, look for it in your local theaters about 2010. So I'm going to start out with a traditional ballad. Now, I've had a couple of different requests this week, and I'm going to ignore all of them and do one that's actually one of my very favorite ones that I learned from a ballad singer over home by the name of Inez Chandler. Now, I grew up in a little community called Sodom, and for all of you that don't know, most of you do, but Sodom, the only similarity in the one in the Bible and where I grew up is the way that it's spelled. And no, there ain't no Gomorrah. And in Sodom, though, as you can imagine, there were a lot of characters, and Inez was one of those characters. And it was from Inez that I learned the majority of what she referred to as them dirty love songs. So this one is one that she would always start out by saying, "You know, honey, it's always amazing what a woman can see her way through when she sets her head to it. There was an old farmer lived over the hill. If he ain't moved away, he's a living there still, singing fie, fie, diddle, fie, diddle, diddle all day. Well, the devil stepped up to the old man at plow and said, one of your family I'm a-taking right now, singing fie, fie, diddle, fie, diddle, diddle all day. And the farmer, he said, I've come undone. You've come to get my only son, a-singing fie, fie, diddle, fie, diddle, diddle all day. Well, it's not your son or your gal I crave, but your old scolding wife, and her I'll have a-singing fie, fie, diddle, fie, diddle, diddle all day. Well, welcome, sweet Satan, from the bottom of my heart, and I hope you and her nevermore shall part, singing fie, fie, diddle, fie, diddle, diddle all day. Well, he stuffed her down in an old tow sack, and he looked like a camel with a hump on its back, singing fie, fie, diddle, fie, diddle, diddle all day. Well, he carried her down to the forks of the road, said, get down, old woman, you're a hell of a load, a-singing fie, fie, diddle, fie, diddle, diddle all day. Well, he carried her up to the gates of hell, said, punch up a fire, we'll roast her well, singing fi-fi-diddle-i-fi-diddle-i-diddle all day. Well, there's six little demons a-setting on the wall. She grabbed up a poker and thrashed them all, a-singing fi-fi-diddle-i-fi-diddle-i-diddle all day. Long come a little devil, he's a-dragging his chain. She grabbed it up and smattered out its brain, singing fi-fi-diddle-i-fi-diddle-i-diddle all day. Well, she grabbed old Satan by the hair of the head, said, I'd have done killed you if you weren't done dead, singing fi-fi-diddle-i-fi-diddle-i-diddle all day. And the littlest demon stepped up and said, better take her back, Daddy, or we'll all be dead, singing fi-fi-diddle-i-fi-diddle-i-diddle all day. Well, the farmer saw him coming, and he bit his tongue, broke for the woods in a flat-out run, a-singing fi-fi-diddle-i-fi-diddle-i-diddle all day. And he is heard to say as he run o'er the hill, if the devil won't have her, be damned if I will, singing fi-fi-diddle-i-fi-diddle-i-diddle all day. Said, sure's your mam, and she sure is well, and I'll tell you what, she's tore up hell, a-singing fi-fi-diddle-i-fi-diddle-i-diddle all day. And the children, they said, we surely are cursed, she went to hell and come back worse, a-singing fi-fi-diddle-i-fi-diddle-i-diddle all day. Said, I've been the devil for all of my life, but I'd never been to hell till I met your wife, singing fi-fi-diddle-i-fi-diddle-i-diddle all day. Well, this proves that the women are better than the men, 'cause we can go to hell and come back again, a-singing fi-fi-diddle-i-fi-diddle-i-diddle all day. Well, I have been asked to tell this story. See, growing up over in Sodom, as I mentioned earlier, there were lots of characters. My father was one of those characters. He had a saying for just about anything in this world. For instance, when I was a teenager and my feet were about this big in comparison to the rest of me, my father would say, honey, don't worry about it. You're as graceful as a cow on a loose board pile. And to show you what kind of feller he was, Daddy gave me a call when I turned 40, 5 o'clock in the morning. Telephone rang. So I kind of fumbled around and I said, hello? And Daddy said, happy birthday. And I said, Daddy? He said, yeah, it's me. See, it's sort of traumatic turning 40, and I thought I'd sort of get the jump start on this wishing you a happy birthday. How does it feel to be 40? And I said, well, damn, Daddy, I don't know. You woke me up out of a dead sleep. I don't have a clue. But as best I can determine, it don't feel no different than it did when I was 39. And Daddy said, yeah, getting testy, that's what happens when you start getting older. And he said, but now, honey, I want you to remember as you go through the day that life begins at 40. Well, now, by this time, I'd sort of gotten woke up a little better, and it sort of touched my heart that Daddy had remembered my birthday and had called. So I said, well, all right, Daddy, I'll remember that. I appreciate you calling. He said, yeah, but you need to remember it ends shortly thereafter, about 42. Well, down the road from us lived another one of those characters. Now, her name was Little Betty, and I'd never heard her called anything other than Little Betty, and there was a reason for that. See, she was about 4 feet and 11 inches tall and weighed about 78 pounds sopping wet. Well, now, Little Betty was married to Amos, and Amos, bless his heart, was a great big old thing. Have you noticed in the mountains how you can say anything you want to about somebody as long as you precede it with bless his or her heart? Well, he must have been 6'6" and weighed close 400 pounds. Well, Amos got sick one winter, and he was sick all that winter and up into the spring. And to borrow another one of Daddy's sayings, Amos got to be older than God's dog. And so that spring, Amos died. Well, now, the custom back then was to send your dearly departed off with the undertaker and whatever clothes that you wanted them fixed up in. And then the undertaker would put them in the coffin in those clothes and bring them back to the house for the setting up. And they would put them in the front room. And then a setting up, or they called it setting up with the body too, was kind of like an extended potluck that went on for 2 days and two nights. And then on the third day, they would take the body on to the church and have the funeral and then to the cemetery and bury him. Well, now there in Sodom, we had every flavor of Baptist that you could imagine. We had missionary Baptist, free will Baptist, hard shell Baptist, primitive Baptist, southern Baptist, regular Baptist, just plain old Baptist, foot washing Baptist, and buzzard Baptist. Now, buzzard Baptists, for all of you that don't know, are Baptists who only go to church when there's a funeral, so we call them buzzard Baptists. Well, the Baptist church that Amos and little Betty was members of had gotten into a big row in amongst the congregation. Now, that was a common occurrence over there around Sodom, and it was so common, actually, that we referred to them as Baptist swarms. You know, part of the congregation would swarm off and go down the road and establish another Baptist hive. And so they had experienced a swarm. And the ones that was left there in the church itself decided to take up money and buy Amos a suit to be buried in. Well, now, when the ones that had swarmed caught wind of that, they were not about to be outdone. So they took up money and bought Amos another suit. So now there was Amos at his death, the proud possessor of two suits. And he had never owned a single one the whole time he was living. Well, little Betty chose the green suit. And she sent it off with the undertaker, and he fixed Amos up, put him in his coffin, and brought him back there to the house. Well, the first person to show up that afternoon for the setting up was little Betty's sister Vine. And Vine and little Betty was standing there looking over in the coffin. And Vine said, "No, little Betty, they ain't got his hair parted on the right side. Now he don't look natural." So they went back in the bedroom and came back with a brush and a comb and redone his hair, reparted it, smoothed it down, and was looking some more. Little Betty said, "Well, you know, Vine, looking at him laying there, I believe I'd like him better in that other suit." So they decided to change Amos's clothes. Well, little Betty first tried climbing over in the coffin with him, and she unbuttoned buttons, and she pulled, and she tugged. But now he fit awful snug in that coffin, and she couldn't get his clothes off. So she climbed back over in the floor, and they studied about it. And they decided the best thing to do would be to get Amos out of that coffin to where they could get at him good. So they managed to sort of strain and struggle around there and sort of jerked Amos up on the side of the coffin. Well, you know, it's sort of narrow up there on that little lip of the thing. And so he fell on into the floor. And then they changed his clothes. And then they had a big problem on their hands. So they circled right around and around Amos like two hawks a-circling. trying various body parts, couldn't budge him. So Vine said, "Lord, have mercy, little Betty. What are we gonna do now?" Said, "Folks is fixing to set in to showing up for this year setting up. And he does look awful unnatural laying there on the floor that way." Said, "People will talk." So they decided the best thing to do would be for little Betty to run up the road to Irving's. Now, Irving was my daddy. And get him to come down there and help them put Amos back over in the coffin. Well, it was a right steep climb up the road there from little Betty's up to the top of the hill where our house was. And by the time she cleared the top of the hill, why, she was winded and was breathing hard. Now, use your imagination. On the inside of the house, Daddy was watching a baseball game. Now, Daddy was a big sports fan, but he loved baseball. And he'd get right in there and argue with the umpires and everything else when the game was going on. And I was sitting on the couch about 8 years old watching Daddy, because it was a lot more fun to watch Daddy and hear what he had to say than it was to watch a ball game. So all of a sudden, the door flew open. And there stood little Betty, sort of hanging on the doorknob, weaving back and forth, breathing hard. And she said, "Irv, you've got to come down to the house and help us get Amos back in his coffin." And Daddy said, "Well, where in the world is he, little Betty? I thought he is dead." Little Betty said, "Irving, you fool, he is dead. Me and Vine got him out in the coffin to change his clothes, and he's laying there on the floor, and we can't pick him up off of the floor to get him back over in his coffin." And Daddy said, "Little Betty, damned if you didn't worry him to death the whole time he is living, and you're still after him." But Daddy, being the kind of feller he was, he stood up, and I stood up. Boy, I wasn't about to miss this. And down the road we went to little Betty's, got down there, and sure enough, there laid Amos in the floor, Vine a-keeping watch. Well, Daddy and Vine and little Betty struggled around there for a while, and it soon became obvious that Amos had sort of spread and settled, and they couldn't budge him. So little Betty said, "Lord Irving, now what are we gonna do?" Daddy said, "Well, little Betty, all I would know to do would be to go down to the store. There'll be a crowd down there watching the ball game, and I'll see if I can't get somebody to come back up here and help me." So Daddy left, and in a thought, he was back with a full carload of men. And between all of the men and Daddy and Vine and little Betty, they managed to sort of scoop Amos up, shuffled him back over, and pressed him back down in the coffin. Then little Betty stepped back and looking over in the coffin. Now see, the men were back behind us by now talking about the ball game. She straightened his tie up and smoothed his hair down around his head. She said, "Well, you know, Vine, now that I look at him laying there, I believe I did like him better than that other suit." Well, I'm going to call my husband, Jim Taylor, who's a hammer dulcimer builder and player and teacher. He's here this week teaching old-time repertoire on the hammer dulcimer. Y'all can whisper amongst yourselves a minute.
You
He never tells.
I guess if we could hear him, it wouldn't
people
be whispering, would it?
Jim's a Civil War. What?
You ought to see the shadows on this.
Oh. Yeah.
Miss Mashed.
Sorry, honey, but that's your problem. Jim's a Civil War reenactor. How many of you know what a Civil War reenactor is? A bunch of you. Well, for those of you that don't, these men go off on weekends to reenact battles of the Civil War. Gettysburg and Shiloh and Chickamauga. And they have all these little tents and little uniforms. Little guns. And they'll spend a whole weekend running around in the heat in wool suits, pretending to shoot at each other. And I thought that was kind of interesting. I was over in England a couple of years ago doing a tour, and this fella came up to me and he said, you know, Sheila, we reenact the American Civil War around in these parts. And I said, you mean like here? And he said, well, you know, they reenacted the Battle of Gettysburg outside of Rome a couple of weeks ago. And I said, Georgia? And he said, no, that would be Italy. And I said, well, like, how do they decide, you know, who's Confederate and who's Union? And he said, oh, we've got that figured out. You have to agree to be a Union soldier for 2 years before they will allow you to be a Confederate. Well, anyhow, while Jim goes off to these little reenactments, he plays a lot of music. And it was from Jim that I realized that a lot of the fiddle tunes that we all play, like Soldier's Joy and Forked Deer and all those great tunes, were actually played by both sides during the Civil War. That was kind of their music, you know, that they played. Jim don't talk much, have you noticed? Would you like to tell them about the tunes, dear?
We're going to do a little medley. I got something caught in my throat. They got peanuts back here. And I was... We're going to do a little medley. And the first tune is Quince Dillon's High D. And if you were at Alan Jabor's lecture last night, you learned a little bit about Quince Dillon. He was actually a Civil War fifer and was in a couple of Virginia regiments through the war. And signed his name with an X, which means he was illiterate. So he could read, probably couldn't read music, so he could illiterate and a musician at the same time, a man after my own heart.
Like a lot of us.
Yeah. And then, anyway, it's called Quince Dillon's High D, and for those of you who don't know it, it's got a high D note in it up there, which with these shadows will probably wind up being a high E flat or C sharp tonight. You can take bets among yourselves as to which it will be. The second tune we're going to do is a tune I learned from the fifers in my little Civil War reenactment group. And I learned it under the title of My Love Is But a Lassie Yet, but Sheila knows it by a bunch of different names.
I learned it as Chinky Pen, which is a little, you know, native nut that grows down there in western North Carolina. Chinky Pen looks kind of like a chestnut, only smaller. But the West Virginia version of it is known as Sweet 16. And the Western Virginia version of it is known as Too Young to Marry. The Arkansas version is known as Crooked Stovepipe. But it's the Eastern Kentucky version that just touches my heart. It's called I Love You So Much I Can't Go to the Bathroom. lot of people laugh when I say
I think that's sweet.
And the last one is?
Last one is the oft abused and often played tune called Mississippi Sawyer. And that's all.
And that's all.
Thank you.
you folks that asked for, thank y'all, by the way. You know, it's an amazing thing how a hammered dulcimer and a claw hammer banjo go so well together. You wouldn't imagine. Yeah, it's great. Thanks. For all of you that asked for Granny's song, we'll be doing a songwriters concert on Friday night. Kate Long kind of put that together for all of us songwriters, so I'll be doing that one on Friday night, along with one that I wrote for Jim. This one is, however, one that came to be very special in the last couple of years. It was written in 1997 by my cousin Janet Crow and myself, and the words were written by us. The music was written by Jim, and as a lot of you know that have seen me in the last 2 years, you know that my father passed away. And, you know, it took me a while to sort of move beyond that. I don't reckon it's something that you ever get over, but this song kind of has a lot more meaning now. It's called Family Tree, and I hope y'all enjoy it. And thank y'all very much. It's always great to perform at Augusta because the audiences are just wonderful. So thank you very much. Right outside my window stands a giant old oak tree. It's been there all our lifetimes, sharing all our memories. Sheltered neath its massive limbs, my Nana as a bride, and proved a place of refuge for my mama as a child. Daddy built a clothesline and attached it to the tree, and on its lowest limb he hung a tire swing for me. It was there beneath its branches that my Nana taught me how to pop my fingers in my mouth and whistle long and loud. Looking in my mother's face, reflected there I see something of my grandmother . Guess that makes us branches on an ever-spreading tree. The years passed by so quickly, Nana's health began to fail. Daddy put her up a porch swing neath the tree she loved so well. She spent her final days there, sharing memories with me. As we looked up through the branches of our special family tree. The night of Nana's passing, I stood beneath the tree. The dew fell just like teardrops raining down on me, and as a breeze moved through its branches, I heard Nana's voice so clear, saying, "Don't you fear tomorrow, honey, Nana's always near." Today we built a clothesline and attached it to the tree, and watched our little boy swinging happy, high and free. And as I look into his clear blue eyes, reflected there I see the latest precious branch on our growing family tree. Looking in my son's sweet face, reflected there I see something of his grandfather looking back at me. And even in the mirror, it's the two of them I see. Guess that makes us branches on an ever-spreading tree. Thank you very much.
Sort of have to take a breath after that one. Well, I wanted to give you an update on what's coming up this evening and also tomorrow so that you'll be aware of all the things going on. Immediately after this concert, you'll be able to go up the hill just a bit for a wonderful dance. Dances are happening each evening. And you might want to go down the hill and then back up again and down again. And check out all the different music going on, the jamming. The Ice House is a good place to check out. I heard a rumor that there'd be some good singing there tonight. All kinds of things going on. You know, you can't do it all, but you sure can try. You know that it's the moment that you go to bed when they'll sing the song that you would have loved the most of the whole week, and you'll miss it. That was my philosophy the first few years when I came, and so I was the last one to turn out the light, except for those nights when there were fiddlers still out my window. Tomorrow there's quite a few things going on. I want to make sure you know. Let's see, tomorrow is Wednesday, right? Okay, good. It's hard to keep track. 1:30, Old Time Week group session. At 7 o'clock, there's a family concert down in the park. All you need to do is walk down the hill, and you're in the park right there. And in the pavilion there where they have the Augusta Festival, I'll be doing a family concert. And the community's invited. Students are invited. Anyone who would like to come. Kids, adults, any age will probably enjoy that concert from 7 to 8. And I'll excuse anybody who needs to rush back up for the 8 o'clock Vocal Week student showcase, which should be a lot of fun as well. That's happening at 8 o'clock. And then again, there'll be a contra dance happening after all that in the evening as well. Well, for his first time at Augusta teaching, J.W. Johnson is here this evening, and he's from St. Albans, West Virginia, and has been teaching. He said that he's really been enjoying his class, teaching Songs of the Carter Family, and he has a pretty close connection, played with Jeanette and Joe Carter for a while there. So I'd like to introduce to you J.W. Johnson.
Well, I don't reckon I need to introduce this first one, so I'll just go ahead and start picking it. Thank you.
mangles and waving black hair, with the roses so red and the lilies so fair, and the myrtles so bright with the emerald dew, the pale lamb the leader and eyes look like blue. Oh, I'll dance, I will sing, and my life shall be gay. I will charm every heart, and his crown I will sway. When I woke from my dreaming, my idols was clay. All portions of love had all flown away.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate it, I really do. It's a great privilege to be here with you all tonight, and I'm just having the greatest time. I'm just having a ball here. So I hope you enjoy the tunes that I do for you tonight. And I'm going to have a little bit of help if they'll come out here. I'd like to introduce Tom and Gina Rosenkrantz. I'm being instructed here.
She instructs me quite often.
So. Don't believe that.
Well, when I first got here last year, Tom and Gina were some of the first people I met. And I really had a ball with them singing some of the old Carter family songs. So when the people that helped me sing back home didn't show up, they were the first people that I came to because I knew that they would do a fantastic job. And we've been having a ball with it. I'm enjoying it a great deal. So here's one that we've worked up, and I know everybody knows it. Although we do a different arrangement on it, we kindly do the arrangement that Mother Maybelle and the daughters did. It Takes a Worried Man. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long. I went across the river and I laid down to sleep. I went across the river and I laid down to sleep. I went across the river and I laid down to sleep. When I woke up with the shackles on my feet, it takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long.
29 links of chain around my legs. 29 links of chain around my legs. 29 links of chain around my leg, and on each link, the initial of my name. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long. If anyone should ask you who composed this song, if anyone should ask you who composed this song, if anyone should ask you who composed this song, just tell it was I and sing it all day long. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song, Lordy. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. It takes a worried man to sing a worried song. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long. I'm worried now, but I won't be worried long.
Thank you. Tom's getting his banjo, I'll tell you a little bit about this next song. It's a song that I first heard from Bill and Hazel Westfall.